Hey, this is Dean from Leatherwolf, and you're watching CMS TV.
It's the Babes in Toyland doing a horrible rendition of Eric Carmen's All By Myself. And as you're well aware, Eric Carmen passed away this week.
Yeah. What was he, 75 or something?
74. Cleveland native Eric Carmen.
Oh, well, that makes it more important then. Well, because he was born somewhere within 100 miles of me.
He could have been your neighbor for all you know.
Yeah. Dude, he literally could live in the house next door. I wouldn't have known.
Of course, because so. You don't leave the house.
That's right. But anyway, rest in peace, Eric Carmen.
Right.
I like that Dirty Dancing song.
Yeah.
That was okay.
Well, put him back on the charts after like over a decade.
Yeah, because that was the song before it, right? It was All By Myself?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, well. Whatever. Average talent. Rest in peace.
That's just kind of interesting. I mean, I didn't really know much about Eric Cartman. Eric Cartman. Eric Carmen.
Yeah, Eric Carmen.
Yeah, Aaron Carmen. Former WONE DJ.
Yep.
Or Eric Cartman, the little smart ass on South Park.
Exactly.
One of those guys.
One of them. We have Jake Hudson in here saying hello.
Who's Jake Hudson?
I don't know. No, I have, or Jake Husden. I don't know who Jake is, but
hello, Jake.
He paid to have his quote, his comment read.
Oh, he did. Just hello?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, he paid. I don't know. I don't know how this all works, but. He paid something. He subscribed and
in the chat room.
Yeah, now he's a monthly supporter. So,
okay.
Hello, Jake. Glad to know you.
I'm glad to know new people. How are you doing today? I'm doing okay.
That's good to hear. Yes.
Yeah. How about that?
Whoa. I don't know if you're familiar with this show, Jake, but that is not the kind of conversation that we have.
All right. Well, thank you, Jake. Thank you for your patronage.
Yes.
Just for that, I raise a special backstage glass to you. Look at that.
Look at that. Glass.
A frosty glass of Jack and Coke, the drink of all rockers everywhere. So
there it is.
I raise the glass to you.
That's right. As Kiss would say, I raise my glass to rock and roll. And Jake.
Skippy says he has the money from Rod.
There you go.
Maybe Rod is financing his venture.
Could be. Too funny.
Very good. Well, Rod is everywhere.
I guess so.
No kidding. Good for them. All right. It's always good to have new patrons.
That's right.
On board. So
definitely appreciate it.
So are we close to 100 now?
We are. Let me see. I don't know.
Class, we at 98. We at 99.
Classic metal show. We are at 98.
98. So we're too shy of that magic 100.
Yeah, we'll probably get to the 2 by the time the Hannah Gadsby thing hits.
Yeah, there we go. All right, very good.
And then right after it, we'll be back to like 93.
Sure. People drop back out. Well, that's fine. Whatever. Trust me, the money goes to just operating expenses.
If we get to 100, and again, I'm not trying to be salesman here, but I think once we get to 100, we get a whole lot more storage.
Okay.
Like that I can upload videos to. So I can upload the videos for the subscribers without any of the commercials on them. So you won't have to deal with the commercials of Rumble, and you won't have to deal with, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I'll take our commercials out too. you know, not that we have any, not that we're making any money off commercials, but I do put them on there for the, you know, for our show and Eric's picks and, you know, that kind of stuff. So
yeah, absolutely.
So I'd be happy to make that if we can. If the reason I don't do it now is because we don't have enough space. You only get 15 gigs of uploads per month.
Right.
And each video is about a gig to two because I do them at high res.
Sure.
So, you know, I could only do, you know, like one. We usually get to about 10 gig with me doing one episode every week. So, but if we get to an unlimited or 50 gig or whatever, I'll do that. I'll put them all up there. So,
very good.
Helps people not have to waste their time when they watch us.
Yeah, there you are. All right, very good.
So,
all right. Well, I got a few nutty things.
Okay.
That, let's just, let me see here. Let's be nostalgia. Let's go back to the 80s, shall we?
All right.
A lot of people are, especially our demographic, if you will, they're fans of the, John Hughes movies.
Sure.
The John Hughes movies kind of ruled the decade of the 80s with Pretty in Pink, 16 Candles, right. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Breakfast Club,
sure.
Weird Science. You know, the list mm-hmm. goes on and on. St. Elmo, I don't know. Did he do St. Elmo?
I don't know if he did St. Elmo or not.
I don't think he did. But anyway, the group of actors, actresses in that era was obviously Michael Anthony Hall, Judd Nelson, Ally Sheedy, Molly Ringwurm. You know, they were often featured in most of his movies.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And apparently Andrew McCarthy.
Of course. Hold on real quick. Just so that you can see this.
Yes. They're queer movies.
Of course.
No, they were good movies. They were actually funny. Some of the movies were very funny.
They're way too modern for Jackal.
Is it? Yeah, I know.
Jackal wants a streetcar named Desire or Gone with the Wind.
Right, of course.
Raging Bull. Just knock it off, idiot.
But anyway, John Hughes ruled the 80s as far as like memorable 80s movies were concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And the actors that acted in these movies, Rob Lowe is still very popular. I think is he hosting some kind of a show now? He's got a new show he's hosting or something now. I saw some commercial pop up for him.
I know he's big on the Atkins diet. Like he's like the spokesman for the Atkins diet.
He had a prominent role in that Parks and Recreation.
He was funny in that show.
He assumed a role in that TV show. And you know, he's a very, very busy working actor. Yeah. He was Tommy Boy.
Yeah. He is the star of the TV show 911 Lone Star.
Okay.
Which is like a spinoff of 911 with Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Okay.
So it's like about same old shit.
Right.
911 call, they go out and fucking solve the mystery or solve the crime or whatever. No,
Andrew McCarthy, he was in Weekend at Bernie's, and he was in St. Elmo's Fire, and
mm-hmm.
He did various movies too. And Ally Sheedy, she was in that movie. What was that movie she was in with that R2-D2 character? What was that?
R2-D2 character.
Yeah, it was a robot. She was in that movie with the robot.
What was that? Short Circuit.
Short Circuit. She was in that, obviously, and she was in St. Elmo's Fire, and she was in Breakfast Club, and she did, you know, and she still does
War Games.
Yeah, she was in that, and so anyway, these actors of that day, some of them still very active in the movie and television world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Andrew McCarthy he's trying to put together a documentary of that era.
Okay.
And if you remember, if you followed TV or People Magazine or anything back in the day, they referred to that group of actors as the Brat Pack.
They did. Real quick, and before you go further, would you like to see Ally Sheedy today?
Yeah, she's kind of rough. I think she's like on some TV show. She's like plays the mother of some daughter of something or other. I don't know. I saw her and she's but she still looks like Ally Sheedy, just 50 years older.
Put a little green paint on her face. She could be the Wicked Witch. That fucking hook nose. Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah.
Well, you know, she is what, 62
yeah,
or 60
something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's born in 62. How old does that make her?
Oh, the 61 then. Yeah.
So yeah, she's still out there. She was hot then. She's not so hot now.
Yeah. So anyway, Andrew McCarthy is trying to put together a documentary to document the actors that played in these movies during that time, and it's called Brats, is what the name of the documentary is called, Brats.
Okay.
Well, here's
I'm just flipping through them.
I agree. He does look better than Madonna.
Well, what's that say? Says my ass as a shit comes out of it, but so what?
Judd Nelson has, I saw Molly Ringwald. I never really found her attractive. I'm just not into redheads, but I did see her recently and she actually does look really good.
She looks pretty good.
Yeah, she looks pretty good.
Yeah, there was a movie with her. I forget what it was called, but she was topless in it and she had some nice bags.
Really?
Back in the day, she did. She had some nice tits.
Huh, okay.
I forget what that movie was called, but I certainly jerked off to the clips of it.
Of course you did.
Of course I did.
Well, anyway, Judd Nelson has no interest in revisiting his Brat Pack days for Andrew McCarthy's upcoming documentary called Brats. It seems strange to have that subject matter be something for edited entertainment, Nelson 64 said. I don't know why. I mean, that was a historic time. I mean, it's history. Why is that? I find that comment kind of weird.
What else is he known for? He's not known for anything else.
Yeah.
Why do I think he's one of these guys that thinks he's an artist still? He's like, well, that's something I did in my 20s. I'm so much further past that than that.
But the thing is that that's what launched his career. You know, that's why we even know him. You know, but anyway, he says also, like, he's a nice guy, but I haven't seen him in like 35 years. And it's like, I'm not going to be like, hey, dude. No. Yeah, I agree with that. He came off as real fruity.
Yeah, he really... He was the jock, right?
No.
Who was he in Breakfast Club?
He wasn't in Breakfast Club.
Was he in?
He was in St. Elmo's Fire.
Which I did not
see. He had a thing for Ally Sheedy, and he was like the real sensitive type.
Right. Who was the jock in Breakfast Club?
That was Emilio Estevez.
Emilio Estevez. Okay, yeah. That's who I was thinking this was. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Andrew McCarthy was in Weekend at Bernie's. Remember the movie?
Yeah, that I do remember, yeah.
Yeah, he was like, coming out! Right. Oh, Bernie! That's a funny movie. Ass movie. I love that movie.
But sure, anyway. Jim's like, that movie sucks! Yeah, terrible!
Are we supposed to believe that they spent the weekend with a dead guy?
What a not prank. Very believable! Not so, very believable!
So stupid. I would never watch that movie again. Yeah.
Now, Charlie Chaplin, that was an actor.
Even with that Hitler mustache.
That's right. Just made him tougher.
Right. McCarthy's ABC News documentary, which is set to air on Hulu later this year, will address the zeitgeist phrase that altered the careers of Hollywood's biggest young stars from the 1980s. While Nelson confirmed that there was a request for him to join the project, he ultimately politely declined the offer. I don't even know who's in the Brat Pack.
Yes, you do.
What a stupid, that's a stupid thing to say. Yeah. It was all over every Teen Beat magazine, People magazine, the Brat Pack. I mean, it was widely publicized. That's why we even know it as the Brat Pack.
He does. He's
don't say I don't even know who's in the Brat Pack.
Again, he's one of these guys thinks he's bigger than his biggest role.
Stop it already.
He's an artist.
Yeah. Nelson told us, noting that being a part of a cultural phenomenon wasn't exactly a bright spot in his career. It's like, why kind of rebirth something that wasn't necessarily fun? Well, because it existed in its history and it happened and you were part of it. That's why.
And because you're not known for anything else.
That's what documentaries are for. They document something that happened in history. And that was that ruled a whole decade. That ruled the 80s.
Oh, dude. Those movies
ruled the 80s.
I wasn't a part of that. Are you kidding? I don't even think I was in the Rat Pack or the Brat Pack or whatever the fuck it's called. Yeah, I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, who was in that? I don't even know what that is. Yeah, there's Andrew McCarthy. Why would you say something like that?
It's a dumb thing to say, that's for sure.
Here's another dumb thing to say. How can we be experts on something that didn't ever really exist?
Shut up. It was a fucking... come on. He's just ironic, I guess.
I guess. What do you mean it didn't exist? It did exist. You guys appeared at red carpet events and all kinds of stuff together as this group. Mm-hmm. That kind of ruled the Hollywood scene in that genre that you represented at that time. You were the young actors of that time.
Yeah, this is, wow, he's coming off like a real dick here.
That's why I brought this story to the table, because it's like, why are you acting like you had nothing to do with this?
No.
Everybody knows John Bender. Stupid, worthless, no good, goddamn freeloading asshole, son of a bitch. You forgot lazy and disrespectful. Shut up, bitch. Go make me a turkey pot pie.
Right.
Who doesn't remember that?
Yeah. Apparently he doesn't, because it didn't exist.
Yeah, okay. A play on the nickname The Rat Pack, made up of actors from the 1960s, including Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra. The Brat Pack was first coined in a 1985 New York Magazine article that largely described cast members of two major film released that year, that being The Breakfast Club and St. Elmo's Fire. Nelson, McCarthy, Rob Lowe, Demi Moore, Emilio Estevez, Mar Winningham, and Molly Ringwald were all part of the gang, but certain other A-listers were also grouped in there as well, such as Timothy Hutton, Tom Cruise, Nicolas Cage, and Sean Penn. Right?
Right.
They were all in that era.
Yeah.
While Nelson admitted those labels as Brat Pack members were friends at the time, their ties were often overstated. What was so strange is that I lived in New York, then I did a movie with people out here in LA. He explained, so it's like then I'm hanging out with them, and then the movies go over, I go back to New York, and I'm not going to hang out and be like, hey, let's go to the Hard Rock Cafe. It's weird.
But nobody's asking him to do that.
No, he's saying that we weren't like a tight-knit group. We just acted together. Like, I was in New York, and those people were in L.A.
Okay.
And I just happened to be there to make this movie, couple of movies that were huge hits. But then after that, I went back to New York to do my odd fun.
Yeah, no, I get what he's saying. What I'm saying is, why wouldn't you show up and just say that in a documentary? If that's your experience, then that's still why they're making the documentary, is so that you dicks share your experience.
But apparently he doesn't want to be associated with the riffraff.
What a cunt.
That's kind of what I'm saying here. It's just like, you played a major part in this.
Yeah.
Stop acting and trying to distance yourself from this. The only reason we know Judd Nelson is because you played John Bender, and you played, I can't even remember what his name was in St. Elmo's Fire, but he played a major role in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't, this dude's coming off like a dick. He was in Pretty in Pink as well.
He wasn't in Pretty in Pink.
Who? Judd Nelson. Andrew McCarthy?
No, Judd Nelson. Yeah. Andrew McCarthy, he was in that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, this guy's coming off like a dick. Now I hate him.
Nelson,
I never really thought much about him. Now I fucking dislike him.
Yeah, I know. It's just like, dude, you just fucking ruined it. It's like, why are you having to try to distance yourself and act as if you weren't even part of that?
Yeah, thanks a lot, you old cunt.
Right.
Fucking douchebag.
Nelson added that although the quote-unquote so-called Brat Pack all got along great and had a great time together while on the set, the actor is still close with his Breakfast Club's co-stars, he told us. They would go their separate ways once the project was over.
No kidding.
Again, distancing. I'm distancing. It was just a job. I showed up. I did my part. After that, I had nothing to do with those people.
Isn't that how all entertainment is? You spend 3 months with them and then you go your separate ways. But maybe every once in a while you throw a phone project. Call. Yeah, maybe once in a while you get a phone call or something. Hey, how you been? Cool. Yeah. How about you? Good. All right, good talking.
Yeah, or you run into each other at some event.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, you know, what's up? Well, I'm doing this movie now. Oh, I'm you know, doing a pilot for this TV show.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at this guy's career. He's had a bunch of other stuff, but nothing as big as
Breakfast Club.
I mean, nothing. Not Judd. Andrew McCarthy.
Oh, Andrew McCarthy, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at his career. I mean, he's done a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff that I recognize, you know, even later in his career. I don't know why this guy is distancing himself from the rest of the bunch. I don't get it.
Yeah. And because the moniker garnered so much publicity at the time, Nelson told us that the young stars were encouraged to keep away from each other due to the negative connotation. They kind of portrayed my generation of actors as being entitled and irresponsible and unprofessional, he explained, claiming the rumors of bad behavior held little truth, whereas my experience was everyone was on time, everyone knows their lines, it's weird. Well, of course, everybody's just trying to stir it up. Look at these kids, they're up to no good again.
No. You know? That Brat Pack, they're acting bratty again.
Yep, they're just rich entitled little douchebags out there running the streets of Hollywood.
Yeah, now go see them in their next movie.
Right, exactly. It's just ginning up interest in it. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just PR. That's what they do.
Yeah. I think he'd know that by now. He's been in the business 40 fucking years.
McCarthy's documentary will not just feature the Brat Pack themselves, but also journalist David Blum, who coined the term in his New York cover story that initially was meant to serve as a profile on Emilio Estevez. In the piece, he described the group as undeserving, uneducated young actors who party and appear in movies together. Blum shared his regrets about writing that article 2 years after it was published. Over the years, Nelson has been clear in his feelings about Blum. During a 2015 episode of another Bret Easton Ellis podcast, he shared that his gut feeling was to knock Blum unconscious upon meeting him. I knew there was a problem right away, Nelson said, when Blum accompanied him and his friends on a night out. When this guy's at dinner, I say to Amelia, who's this guy? He said, well, he's a reporter. He's writing an article on me. I said, I don't think he should be here. I don't like him. He's at the table when I'm saying this. He continued, this guy just just saying something about him. He had this, let's see, this guy, just something about him. He had a stink to him. And I think that was in retrospect, I would have better been served following my gut feeling and knocking him unconscious. I at least would have felt better about the thing. It was Nelson's standout performance as a criminal John Bender in The Breakfast Club and his role in St. Elmo's Fire that shot him to stardom in the 1980s. After the New York Magazine article made headlines, most of the Brat Pack weren't seen together on screen again for decades. The 2000s saw Nelson shift his focus to TV on programs like Suddenly Susan, CSI, Two and a Half Men, Nikita, Empire and Law and Order, SUV or SVU, but none of those appearances featured any other former Brat Packers.
Mm.
Boy, why are they saying former Brat Packers? Wasn't that something that didn't exist?
I guess not. Or I guess, well, maybe it exists to some people, but not him.
Okay. After the article, not only were we strongly encouraged not to work with each other again, and for the most part we haven't, but it was insinuating we might not want to be hanging out with these people. And you seem to be sticking to that, Judd. Yeah. Nelson claimed during his Easton Ellis podcast interview, and it was like, I don't know that good friends are so easy to come by in this world that they should be tossed asunder. So basically he's like, yeah, I don't want to be a part of your documentary.
All right. Well,
it's like,
well, that's unfortunate, I guess.
I mean, it's just, you were part of it though.
You know what they ought to do? Honestly, do you ever see Jaws 3?
No, I have not.
All right. In the beginning of Jaws 3, there's a scene where first, to set the stage, Roy Scheider just wouldn't do Jaws 3. I think it's Jaws 3. He just said, I'm not going to do that fucking movie. It's junk. And he's another one. He was too big for that. So what did they do? They brought in some young guy, called him his son, I think, right. Who was also a cop that worked on the water. And they put up a big, stupid picture of Roy Scheider on the fucking wall.
All right.
It's in the first scene. If you ever watch it, you'll laugh now that I'm bringing this to light. And they zoom in on the picture just for a second as a fuck you to Roy Scheider.
Yeah.
Okay. They just show his picture, then they zoom back out and show the other guy saying that he's his son, you know.
Okay.
Chief Brody's son. But it's really funny the way they did it. It was a total fuck you to him. That's what they ought to do with Judd here. You don't want to be in the documentary? Fine. They ought to sit them all around a table and put a picture of Judd in the middle of it. And every camera angle turn the picture so that the picture of him's in it. Just to fuck with him. That's what they ought to do.
All right. Yeah, I just don't get that whole attitude. Like, I don't even know who's in the Brat Pack. I don't know. Yeah. It doesn't even exist. It's like, why are you acting as if you have no idea what that's about?
Yeah, why are you acting as if you don't know how all of your money was made?
Right.
All of it became because of that. Anything he made after that came because of that movie, because of Breakfast Club.
Those two movies, St. Mm-hmm. Elmo's Fire and Breakfast Club.
Yeah. Every dollar he made after was because people remember him from that.
Right.
I can't remember anybody saying, oh my God, Judd Nelson, remember him on Law and Order? He was fantastic. God damn, we got to book him for our movie.
Right.
What a douche.
I agree. All right. Are you familiar with Kristen Stewart?
The actress that's like, yeah, in like the Hunger Games or something?
I guess that. I don't know her. I mean, I've seen her picture, but I don't know anything about her.
I'm aware of her, but I don't know that I know her work.
Well, you know, she's an attractive blonde girl. She's okay. I mean, she's okay. Well, okay. Apparently, she's in a new movie called Love Lies Bleeding.
Okay.
It just,
she was in Twilight. My mistake. Thank you. Right.
Again, I don't know much about
her. Who cares?
But same anyway.
Thing.
But she's in a new movie.
Okay.
Love Lies Bleeding.
Okay.
So they did I guess it got released in the theaters this week. And a man was arrested after he was caught pleasuring himself and then falling asleep while at a screening for Kristen Stewart's new film, Love Lies Bleeding.
Chris Aiken, a 55-year-old man, was arrested for...
The moviegoer went to MJR Southgate Cinema in suburban Detroit to watch Stewart's moving picture.
What year is this? Who wrote this, Jim?
A moving picture.
Moving picture? That term went away in 1931.
I know. And clearly enjoyed the movie perhaps a little bit too much. Love Lies Bleeding is considered a sexual film. As it tells the story of a pair of lesbian lovers set in the world of bodybuilding. The man in question went to see one of the first showings, but was soon taken into custody by officers after movie patrons caught him with his penis out and sleeping in his recliner. The Southgate Police, I sent you a little link there. I don't know, somebody put it on X, but I can't open it because I don't have an X account. The Southgate Police Department responded to MJR Southgate Cinema just after 9 p.m. local time on Thursday for a disorderly person who was intoxicating and refusing to leave the business. Upon arrival, the officers encountered a 33-year-old white male subject who was passed out inside one of the movie theaters. That male was subsequently taken into custody by officers for possessions of narcotics, indecent exposure, disorderly conduct, and resisting arrest.
I can't put this picture up because his dick's showing.
Oh, well, that's what I thought was in the picture.
Yeah, I can't put it up because his dick's out.
So that actually was put out there on X. Okay.
I'll tell you, if people really want to see it, I'll put it on the screen.
I couldn't pull it up because I don't have X an account, so I couldn't see what the hell that was there.
If you want to go to that link right there, you can see this guy passed out with his dick out. He's literally passed out and he's got like booze next to him and he's got like one hand on the head of his dick and the other like looks like it's cupping his balls or something in his pants. And like it looks like he had a jacket or something over it, but like it got pulled down or something.
It like slipped off while he was
sleeping. Yeah. Something. Yeah. So he looks, it's pretty fucked up. How embarrassing.
You go to like a real movie theater, not a peep show, and you start jacking your dick to a movie. Like, what the fuck were you thinking?
The real crime here is there's nobody else in the theater. Nobody went to see this movie?
I don't know anything about it, but well, somebody else must have went. They took the picture.
Yeah, the guy behind him, apparently. Guy behind him, and boy, this guy, even more embarrassing, the size of his miniature cock. This dude does, seriously, not that I'm a cock judge. This guy does not have 2 inches of cock. That's a small dick.
Well, he's a grower, not a shower.
Dude, you couldn't water that enough to grow it into a human being size. That is a tiny dick. Jesus. He was jacking off with 2 fingers, I'm thinking.
Yeah. In the picture, the individual is seen asleep in his recliner movie theater chair with his goods exposed, as Chris so eloquently described.
That's right.
The image was posted on X, who shared, went to go see Love Lies Bleeding, and this drunk guy jacked himself off to sleep. If you examine the image, you will see several items on the table next to him, including two small bottles of liquor, a pack of cigarettes, and his movie ticket.
Yeah, and what a lightweight. He's drinking fucking Fireball. he drank like a half a bottle of Fireball. And I don't know what that other liquor is next to it, but it's something equal. It might be another bottle of Fireball. But it's not big bottles. These are little, yeah, like...
Well, these are the airline bottles.
Yeah, they're bigger than that.
Oh, they're bigger than that.
Bigger than the airline bottles. They're like about yay big.
Okay.
You know. Yeah, it's a pretty pathetic photo.
All right.
Do you want me to send it back to you in email?
Yeah, I didn't see it, obviously, because I couldn't open it up in X. Let's see here. Police confirmed to Variety, who first reported the news, that the individual is still in police custody as of Friday morning.
Okay.
Love Lies Bleeding is Kristen Stewart's latest movie, which she says was really exciting to film. I love that it felt... a bit like mythology, like a comic booky throwback to the 80s. Rose made this audition audacious and was a since facing upward gravity is forcing the shaft to sink, making it appear smaller. See, he's an expert. All right. Rose made this audacious and singularly unique experience personal for us and let us be our own individuals and just like grapes all over her thing. Stewart added when speaking to the Associated Press, it's so fun to work with people who are like cuckoo birds, but also really concerted. What are you talking about?
She's like, just doing her best to try and promote this dog of a movie.
I guess. The actress continued to explain how in the movie somehow girls are kind of expected to make everyone feel really comfortable, but that is a very default setting for women. I hate these people with their agendas all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, it was like, yeah, but what if I'm fucked up and my rage is boiling out and bubbling over? And it's
Shut up.
I'm not even going to read the rest of this.
Yeah, enough of the, we get it. It's National Women's Month. Shut the fuck up.
Is that what it is?
It is. It's National Women's Month this month.
I had no idea.
Why would you?
I just got to take your word for it.
Another dumb fake month. Women's Month.
Okay.
When is White Guy Month?
Well, that's all year long.
Is it?
Yeah, because you're privileged.
Because I want a White Guy Month.
Right. So stupid.
All right, well, pretty ridiculous. I sent you the picture. Did you get it?
I didn't look for it yet. Let me take a look. Oh, here. Take a look. Wow. Okay. Wow, that's quite a movie theater. You got your own personal little table.
Yeah.
And you can just kind of sit back and chill, and you got a place to put your booze and...
Yeah, most of them are like that now. A lot of them are like that. I don't want to say most.
I have not been to the theater in years.
Last time I went was Ted 2, and that's how many years ago?
That's been a long time.
Yeah, that's the last time I went to the movies, and they had that then. We sat in those recliners.
All right. Yeah, you got a table. You got your smokes. He's got his vape. He's got his cigarettes going on there. He's got a couple of glasses of ice. Can you drink in a movie theater and smoke?
Yeah. I don't know about smoking. I know you can, because the movie theater we went to for Ted 2, Strongsville, they sold booze.
Really?
Like they had a bar. They had a bar, and you could go out and buy booze at the bar.
All right. Yeah, he's got this whole reclining chair going on and a whole table and two bottles of booze and two glasses of ice and a vape and cigarettes. And
yeah, he moved in.
Yeah. He just made himself at home.
Yeah, he did. He just moved his ass in there. Hey,
good on him. Look at this guy just kind of, you know, just enjoying himself.
Right.
Wow. So he went to see the Kristen Stewart movie and decided to jack it.
Why not just watch it at home and jack it? Go watch Twilight and jack it. She was 10 years younger then.
All right. Fair enough. Well, here's how ridiculous this world has gotten, aside from some guy jacking it in a family movie theater.
Okay.
This whole, and hopefully this doesn't come to this country, but I have a feeling that we're speeding toward this place like a freight train. America's hat. Canada is adopted this ideas and policies, but I'm sure you're well aware of the author J.K. Rowling, who did the Harry Potter movies.
I am.
Mm-hmm. She is worth at least
a zillion dollars.
billion dollars from her Harry Potter. Yeah, Harry Potter franchise.
Right.
You know, I have no idea how much she's worth, but strangely enough, for somebody who's in the business that she's in, you would think that she's like a raging lefty. Mm-hmm. But apparently she's not down with the whole transgender thing.
Right.
And with her kind of money, she can say whatever the hell she wants, because what are you going to do to J.K. Rowling?
She's, yeah, nothing.
She's worth like $1 billion.
She is worth net worth. Where does it say her net worth? Harry Potter. Where does it say the net worth? Philanthropy. She is a raging feminist, though.
Yeah.
Just well, it just says 1 billion.
Yeah.
A mere billion.
Worth, yeah. Well, she's worth $1 billion.
Is that all?
But anyway, she's not down with the whole trans thing. And she's okay. Made it clear. I'm not down with the trans thing.
Okay.
Well, anyway, because of her viewpoint and because of her vocalizing it, trans rights activists are attempting to have J.K. Rowling arrested.
Arrested?
Arrested by Scottish police over misgendering.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
After a complaint about her was dismissed in England. She should be arrested because she has views I don't like.
What an idiot. Whoever this person is, idiot.
Northumbria police last week confirmed that it did not believe the Harry Potter author had committed a criminal offense by publicly calling India Willoughby, a transgender TV personality, a male.
Oh, my God.
You should rot in jail for that.
Firing squad.
Yeah. Willoughby had gone to the police claiming Rowling had definitely committed a crime.
What crime?
By referring to the former celebrity Big Brother contestant as a male.
Shut up. There's no crime.
The 58-year-old former newsreader was vowed to appeal against their decision not to prosecute and is to request a review on the decision. Meanwhile, Willoughby's supporters claim to have submitted complaints against Rowling, who lives in Edinburgh, to police Scotland and hope that the force will come to a different decision. In one complaint published online, a user of X said that they had complained to the police in Scotland and urged others to do the same.
Oh, my God. It is police have to be just going, you're calling for what?
She said
called a woman a guy?
Yeah.
But you know the police are sitting there going, so you're threatened because this billionaire called a woman a man? Really? Yeah, they got to be like, we got terrorists to go fucking capture.
Yeah.
Get off our phone.
Yeah. It alleged that Rowling had misgendered Miss Willoughby repeatedly with the intent to harass her, debase her, dehumanize her, risking inflicting lasting psychological damage.
Well, shut up. If
you're transgender, you're already psychologically damaged.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this is the direction the world is moving to.
Yeah,
with that WEF nonsense, the WEF wants to classify quote unquote hate speech as a health hazard.
Right.
Which would then make it,
because it's psychologically damaged. Yeah,
which would then make it a fucking crime.
Like an assault.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The fucking complaint nonsense. Added Rowling's motive for this attack is unambiguous. It's because Miss Willoughby is trans. Rowling has regularly denied being transphobic, saying she believes people should be able to live their lives as they please. She has, however, voiced concerns that accepting that trans women are literally women, as trans activists claim, and giving them access to female-only spaces, which she says poses risks to the rights and the safety of biological women. Scotland has a different legal system than England, with a controversial hate crime law, which was passed by MSPs exactly 3 years ago on Monday, due to come out in force on April 1st. In a letter to Holyrood's Criminal Justice Committee, the Edinburgh-based police or policy analysis group raised concerns about the implementation of the new law, which creates a new offense of quote unquote stirring up hatred against protected groups.
Shut up. Why are they protected? Protected from what?
From people saying, dude, you're a fucking freak.
Shut the fuck up. I hate this world.
It's the safe space thing, dude.
Yeah, I hate this world.
With weeks to go before the law comes into force, necessary legal orders have to yet to be laid at Holyrood, raising fears of lack of scrutiny or clarity about how it will work. Some campaigners fear the law will be weaponized by trans right campaigners to dilute freedom of speech. Despite a clear promise made in the parliament over the 3 years since the act was passed, the government has done nothing to engage with those concerned about the impact of the bill on freedom of expression on questions of sex and gender identity. The whole process has been a black box of top-down closed policy making that does not inspire confidence. So basically it's like, don't you dare say that. I'm going to have you arrested.
That's right.
Oh, it's not the Swedes making it.
I think it's the Swedes.
It's not the Swedes.
It's the ring in the nose, dual hair colored fruits.
Right. So there you are. We want to get her arrested.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And then one more. We'll wrap up this segment.
All right.
A Jewish passenger is suing JetBlue, claiming religious discrimination after he was thrown off of a plane following his refusal to sit next to a woman. Would it make a difference if it was a trans woman?
I don't know. Shouldn't.
Well, see, that's why I'm tying these stories in.
It's because,
is this a real woman or is this a chick with a dick? If it's a chick with a dick, is it okay for you to sit next to him or her? Or is it still a prohibited practice?
Judaism is just ridiculous anyway.
It's a weird thing. Your what, niece attempted
my
that?
My niece is attempting that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she's still in it. She's still doing it.
Okay. All right. An Orthodox Jewish passenger is suing JetBlue, accusing the airline of religious discrimination, claiming that he was thrown off a plane for trying to change seats after refusing to sit next to a woman. Abraham Lunger, the Orthodox Jew, was set to take a red-eye flight from Palm Springs International Airport to John F. Kennedy International Airport on December 31st, 2023. According to his religious beliefs, he can only sit next to a woman if she is a blood relative or his wife.
Just so lame.
What are you gonna do? Are you afraid you're gonna lean over and take a sniff of her pussy, or what are you doing?
I mean, really, should what? All the guys should be in the front and the women in the back? Is that what we're saying? Do we need a Rosa Parks them to make the Jewish people happy? Get the fuck out of here with this nonsense.
The couple weren't assigned seats in advance, according to the lawsuit filed in the U.S. District Court, Southern District of New York on February 27th. His wife asked a JetBlue ticket agent at the gate prior to boarding if Lunger could be seated next to either her or a man because of his religious beliefs.
I'd like to just stop you at the JetBlue part. If you're flying cattle call on JetBlue, you really don't get many choices. You should be happy you got a seat.
I agree. If you're flying Spirit or Southwest or JetBlue or whatever, it's just like you get what you get, Pally.
Yeah, be happy you got a chair.
Stop being so cheap. Fly American Airlines.
Well, you know what they say about the Jewish people, right?
I don't know. What do they say, Chris?
That they don't sit next to women.
Okay.
What'd you think I was saying?
And was told that they could try to arrange with other passengers to swap per the lawsuit. But the couple weren't seated together. Lunger took a seat, but then saw that a woman who was probably bleeding from her vag at the time was about to sit in the seat next to him. He quietly got up from his seat and stood in the aisle. I'll just fly here, thanks. I'll just stand the whole time.
Yeah.
It's like
where's the handrail?
He's riding the Greyhound to the sky.
That's right.
But before he was able to ask another passenger to change seats, a flight attendant yelled at him to return to his seat. She probably didn't yell.
Listen, Jew! Sit down, Jew!
She probably said, sir, you need to take your seat.
Hey, hook nose, sit down!
He's yelling at me.
Yeah. I'm sure that's what it was, too. Hey, hook nose, sit your ass down! Stop pinching those pennies and take a seat, fucko! And comb that hair off your sideburns, fuckwad.
Right. This flight attendant yelled at him to return to his seat. Lunger explained to the attendant that he was trying to change seats due to his religious beliefs, but she refused to accept that explanation and attempted to prevent Mr. Lunger from switching seats with another passenger who had agreed to switch seats with him. Other passengers who were overheard this conversation also offered to swap seats. The plane's pilot then told Lunger and his travel companions, his wife and another woman, I guess he wasn't allowed to sit next to her either.
No. That
Lunger couldn't change seats because it would cause a weight imbalance.
So he's a fat guy?
I don't know. No idea. Lunger never forced other passengers to change seats with him or used a loud or stern voice, the lawsuit said, but the pilot told Lunger, his wife, and their other travel companions that they had to get off the plane, saying it wouldn't leave with them on board. According to the lawsuit, other passengers who had switched seats weren't asked to leave. Lunger and his two travel companions were told that they weren't allowed to collect their suitcases and would be provided with overnight accommodations, food, or transport. The lawsuit says, well, I've been bumped from flights, and I've never been offered food and transport and all this
other stuff. Yeah, well, the reason you got bumped from your flight was because you're acting like an idiot.
Yeah.
You had a seat. You didn't take it. Fuck you. They don't owe you anything.
Right. They booked alternative tickets for the next day and had to pay both the price difference and the ticket change charge. JetBlue is proud to serve millions of customers each year from many different backgrounds. We do our best to accommodate our customers' various requests while ensuring all customers are provided the experience they're expecting from JetBlue. The lawsuit, which accused JetBlue of religious and racial discrimination, seeks compensatory damages, punitive damages, and attorney's fees and costs.
Yeah, fuck this guy.
I can't sit next to a woman.
No, it's against my religion.
Oh, stop it.
Shut your fucking mouth.
Well, like I said, if it was a trans guy, would he be allowed to sit next to it?
Probably not. I'm sure there's some wrong. I'm surprised he's allowed to fucking be on a plane that flies on Fridays.
That's fucking Catholic.
No, that's also Jews.
Is it the Friday?
Because I, dude, I had a plumber here.
That's Shomer Shabbats, right?
Yeah, Shabbat.
Yeah, you're not allowed Shabbat. To. That's on the Big Lebowski. You can't roll on Saturdays or Fridays.
Yeah, they from Friday at sunset until Sunday. You're not allowed to do anything that has power.
Yeah, you can't handle money. You can't
turn nothing.
On the stove. You can't drive a car.
Nothing. Just have to sit in the dark. Evaluate your religion, I guess. I don't know what you fucking do. Sit around eating some of that fucking dumb bread.
That dumb bread, that non-leavened bread, unleavened
bread. That awful bread.
Some of that John Leaven bread.
Yeah, I don't get it. The whole Orthodox thing is just fucking stupid.
Wow. It's funny.
All right, well, you want one more? I've got one more for you.
Go ahead.
It's in the same vein. We're talking about racism and racist things anyway.
Well, there's nothing racist about this. Well, this is just insensitivity.
Well, this is also insensitive to a certain race.
All right, the Swedes?
The Swedes.
Okay.
The Swedes have a new thing to be upset about.
Really?
They do. There's a new thing that came out as racist toward the Swedes this week.
Is there an Enough's Enough soundtrack being played behind this?
No.
Am I on a new thing?
No. You're not going to believe what is now racist.
All right. What's racist now?
The latest thing that is racist is pain.
Oh, yes. I've heard about this. Advil is on board with this. And I like Advil. I use Advil.
I like Advil as well. But...
And I'm getting to the point where it's just like, fuck Advil. I'm using Tylenol now.
This is unfucking-believable to me. We're going to play the commercials.
Yeah,
have the commercials.
I did see the commercial. Mark Dice actually featured this week. And this is not new. I actually read this article probably 2 years ago.
Really?
That they're saying that physicians don't take Black people's pain complaints seriously.
Everything is racist. I'm just saying it. Everything.
Everything.
See this bottle? See this empty bottle? It's clearly racist.
Right.
This chalice? Racist. My books over here? Racist. Eric's picks? Racist.
Right, of course.
My iPhone? Racist. Everything's fucking racist now.
Yep. No matter what it is, it's all racist.
Yeah. So do you want to see this commercial?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Here we go. So this is Advil's latest commercial for how they're going to use diversity to not be racist for pain.
I should not have to beg my doctor to run tests or ask them to take another...
Or ax them.
Ax them.
Let me get back to this. You should have to ask your doctor how to speak, dummy. Here we go. Or not. What the fuck? Let's try again.
To run tests or ask them to take another look.
Welcome to Believe My Pain, a discussion about systemic pain bias in healthcare. I want to thank all of you for joining me today as we talk about this very important issue. I also want to thank the Pain Equity Project developed by Advil in partnership with the Morehouse School of Medicine and Black Health for inviting us to be a part of their commitment to addressing pain bias in Black communities.
I should not have
pain bias in Black communities.
Pain equity.
Yes. Pain equity.
Yeah. So they're basically saying... black people can't be believed when they said they're in pain.
Where's the benefit to the doctor to not treat somebody in pain?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because I sent you over a link. So,
all right.
So when you're we'll
get there in a minute,
commercial, play this because Mark Dice does a really good job explaining what this is all about.
All right. Yeah, we'll get there in a second because we'll play this. This is a little long. It's like 3 minutes, but we'll stop along the way. This is the pain equity, the reality of it, so we could find out what's going on. All right, here we go.
When I approach a medical professional, I'm frustrated that we have to validate our pain just to get treated like human beings.
I'm going to tell you what there, dude. As a white guy, I'm also frustrated about that.
Because you don't just get pills because you say, hey, man, I need something for this. And they go, are you really sure? Because the last thing a doctor wants to do is give you some kind of an addictive pain medication.
Yeah.
Such as codeine or
oxys or whatever.
Oxycontin or whatever, because pain addiction, pain pill addiction is an epidemic in this country. It's been that way for a while. So they're a little bit hesitant to just say, hey, I got a pain in this arm. Could I get some Oxycontin? They're just like, you know what? You'll do okay with a little bit of Advil. You'll be fine.
Spectre, this is not what the doctors are prescribing. They're not doing that, dude. I don't know where you got that from, but.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit racist in your assumption.
Yeah, there. Crazy Warlock, they're not doing that either.
You know what? This is very insensitive. This is exactly what this commercial is talking about. Your insensitivities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. Ridiculous. I know this. My mom has no black part of her at all. And when she had back surgery, she couldn't get fucking pain meds. And that was for back surgery, you fuckwad. Trust me when I tell you, they're not limiting. They're not seeing black. Oh, there's a black guy. Put away the script pad. That's not happening. This guy's a fuck. This whole thing is fucking ridiculous.
Well, again, this is pandering. This is pandering is what this is.
All right, here's some more.
The healing of the body was easy for me. It's the psychological part. It's awful.
Okay, let's be, okay, 83% of black people said they had a negative experience with a healthcare provider when seeking help dealing with pain. Okay, how many of, you've never really had any kind of real pain, have you, Neely?
No.
I can speak from the white community on this, as I've had a lot of experience at this. And I can tell you, when I was going through it, I had nothing but anger to spit at every single healthcare provider I had. Pain makes you angry. Pain makes you not pleasant. And it makes every experience negative. You got a broken leg or something. Every time you put weight on it, you're fucking thinking, oh, this motherfucking leg. You know, you're mad. You're angry.
Right.
And if these guys can't fix it in fucking a day. Look, I just went through all this shit last year with my shoulder. You think I came away thinking, oh, man. It was a great experience going to this doctor and not finding the solution.
Sure.
6 times in a row. That was fucking wonderful. But I guarantee you they didn't treat me any different than anybody else. They just fucking did their job. These guys are fucking desperate for fucking attention. So desperate. All right, here we go.
I should not have to beg my doctor to run tests or ask them to take another look.
Welcome to Believe My Pain, a discussion about systemic pain bias in healthcare. I want to thank all of you and all of you for joining me today as we talk about this.
What is this? Is that a woman or a guy?
I don't know. It might be that trans guy.
Is that the trans rep? Like they got to have a trans rep in the committee here?
Could be.
It's ma'am.
It's bam.
It's ma'am. All right, here we go.
Very important issue. I also want to thank the Pain Equity Project developed by Advil in partnership with the Morehouse School of Medicine and Black Health for inviting us to be a part of their commitment to addressing pain bias in Black communities. All right, let's get right into it with our first topic, the reality of pain inequity.
All right, the reality of pain equity.
Pain equity is achieved when everyone is treated equally regardless of their age, race, ethnicity, gender, or socioeconomic status, and receives the highest quality pain care and management. Okay.
And I'm sure none of the bad circumstances that they're going to say has anything to do with behavior.
It has nothing to do with that.
It has nothing to do with how you present yourself in the doctor's office, right? Because I know there's been times I've gone to the doctor's office being a cranky cunt, and I did not get fucking the same care that I would when I was like, okay, whatever we need to deal with here.
They're just going to have to process you and get you out of there as quick as possible because they don't want to deal with you.
Because they don't want to deal with an asshole.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's... you're a white guy or not, you're just an asshole to them.
Yeah, they're not any more willing to deal with me being an asshole than you, or any less. This is so stupid. All right, here we go.
Okay, so Dr. Uchi, you have written this book, Legacy: A Black Physician Reckons with Racism in Medicine. You are a legacy Black female physician, and you are armed with expertise that frames this issue around Black pain in such a clear way. And so I'm so glad that you're here today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here to talk to you about this issue that means so much to me and impacts so many members of our community. And we'll hear those stories today.
All right. So
Jesus.
Always emotional. Everything's emotional.
Mm-hmm. Guess I know which lever they're going to be pulling in November.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. All right, here we go.
Dr. Uche, could you just outline what are some of the myths about Black people in pain?
Ooh.
So I think like the main thing is that health professionals think that Black people are biologically different than other people, that our skin is thicker, that we have less sensitive skin and higher pain tolerance. And that is all absolutely false. There is no difference between...
I am 55 years old. How old are you, Neely?
I turned 60 in December.
You turned 60 in December. Have you ever, one time in your 60 years, heard that Black people have thicker skin than white people and that they have more tolerance to pain?
Never once.
I have never one time heard that. That is ridiculous. All right, here we go.
Black patients and patients of other races.
Wow. So what do you think has perpetuated these myths?
You know, the legacy of slavery in this country. I think the interpersonal and systemic racism that still exists in this country, and that is embedded into the institution of medicine and healthcare.
Mm-hmm. It's embedded into the institution of healthcare.
Okay.
It's secretly taught.
Right.
Today we're going to work on nerve damage for white people.
Right.
Get so the you fuck think, out of here.
So did they teach that when she was in medical school, or did they teach that on the day she was absent?
They waited till she missed a day, and that's when they taught all their students.
Really quick before she comes back.
Yeah.
Black people are scared. Same way that we do. Okay, now back to the normal lesson, kids.
Hey, we're going to have a different listen today. The darkie's not here. Really?
Did she?
Is that what you're saying happened?
So when she was in medical school, did they teach this while she was in class?
Well, it was embedded.
Oh, was it?
It's probably when she started writing this book, this wonderful book.
It's just understood.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably. She came to realize it as time went on.
I gotcha.
Jesus Christ. All right, here we go.
You know, our health professionals, most want to do a good job and care for their patients, but unfortunately we're seeing...
All right, Big Rig. This is not a reason that they have better pain tolerance. Come on. It's not true. That is not true.
All right.
And it's not medical community college. Stop it. Stop it. It's not nice. See, probably true. Joe Biden will now give blacks tons of real pain drugs and white people none. Probably right. So.
Right.
Some of these I can't even put up. Philoos.
Yeah, well, of course, Phil.
All right, here we go.
You know, implicit bias, that they are not listening to their patients. They're not responding to their patients' concerns and sometimes even ignoring their patients.
And how do you know that?
Her extensive study, apparently.
Well, how does she knows what's going on in other doctors' offices and things? How does she know that?
She's taken the word of the people complaining, obviously.
Well, okay.
This is a ridiculous thing.
I agree. But again, it's pandering. That's what it is.
It is. All right, let's finish this up and then we'll get to Mark Dice. Here we go.
And the only way that we can expose and address it is by first telling our stories. We want to work better with doctors. And I think that a better, healthier medical system actually allows doctors to do their job better.
Agreed.
Yeah. So tragic. So sad.
It is.
Ridiculous. All right. Let's get Mark Dice posted up here, and we'll get a little of his take as well. He kind of breaks
this down and analyzes it and basically explains it, and, you know.
Yeah, I don't know that we'll do the whole thing for that, because this is like 10 minutes.
Yeah, just a couple minutes in.
Yeah. Here we go.
The Advil Pain Relief Pill Company has a new campaign called the Pain Equity Project, aimed at black people, and you're not going to believe what it is that they're saying. And by the way, Advil is nothing more than ibuprofen. And so anybody who wastes their money on Advil is a moron, because you can buy the store brand ibuprofen in any grocery store in America for probably half the price. And after you learn what Advil is doing, you're definitely not going to want to give them any of your money after this. What is pain equity?
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
He's speaking the truth.
Yep. All right, here we go.
Wondering, well, thankfully, Advil put together this commercial to tell us.
When I approach a medical professional, I'm frustrated that we have to validate our pain just to get treated like human beings.
In an Advil study about pain experiences, 74% of black people said that there is a bias in how pain is diagnosed and treated. What that means is that when they go to the doctor and they're in pain, the doctor is hesitant to prescribe them prescription pain pills because there's an opioid epidemic and healthcare professionals are severely concerned that patients may become addicted to the pills or that they're faking their supposed injuries in order to get them. And so they try over-the-counter medication or physical therapy instead.
I should not have to beg my doctor to run tests or ask them to take another look.
To ask them to take another look? The Advil Pain Equity Project.
I'm glad we both agree on that. All right, here we go.
Project introduces Believe My Pain. Advil hosted a roundtable discussion about systemic pain bias in healthcare.
Welcome to Believe My Pain, a discussion about systemic pain bias in healthcare. I want to thank all of you for joining me today as we talk about this very important issue. I also want to thank the Pain Equity Project, developed by Advil in partnership with the Morehouse School of Medicine and Black Health, for inviting us to be a part of their commitment to addressing pain bias in Black communities.
The legacy of slavery in this country, I think the interpersonal and systemic racism that still exists in this country, and that is embedded into the institution of medicine and healthcare. Mm-hmm. You know, our health professionals, most want to do a good job and care for their patients, mm-hmm. but unfortunately we're seeing, you know, implicit bias, that they are not listening to their patients, they're not responding to their patients' concerns, and sometimes even ignoring their patients.
That's not because the patients are black. It's because the doctors usually only have 10 or 15 minutes per patient because they're overworked and understaffed. And I'm sure the insurance companies have a lot to do with that. And the human body is the most complicated piece of machinery ever created. And there are an infinite number of things that could be going wrong, causing the pain. And even if you can accurately describe the symptoms, that often just narrows it down to perhaps a few dozen different causes. And so they're making an educated guess. And if that doesn't work, then the patient is going to have to come back. And then they're going to have to try again to diagnose what's happening. And like I said, unless a patient is in severe pain, the doctors are always going to recommend over-the-counter pain treatments like ibuprofen or Tylenol, which is acetaminophen, or aspirin, instead of writing people prescriptions for pills because those people could abuse them, or they could turn around and sell them. And so they're always going to try to discourage that. It has nothing to do with anybody's race. It just has to do with the industry itself.
So there you go.
Yeah, perfect. He's 1,000% right.
See, that's it. That's enough right there.
Yep.
So he breaks it down and just throws facts at it. This is just where it's at, and this is why it is, and it's not just black people. It's just the industry in general.
Yeah, apparently.
So there you are.
There we go. So there we go. Pain, racist.
Right, of course. All right. Well, let's wrap up this segment, and we'll come back and do a segment and call it a night.
Sounds like a plan.
Do you want a couple songs or four songs still, or what do you want?
Let me get the regular four, because that'll take us to about 2:15 or so.
All right, fair enough. And then we'll come back and wrap up the show. So what should we play, Mr. Aiken?
How about Call on Me by Whitesnake?
All right.
From Still Good to Be Bad.
Whitesnake, Call on Me.
Yeah.
There it is. All right. Well, we'll play a couple of tunes. We'll come back and we'll wrap up the show. So here it is. It's David Coverdale and Company with Call on Me, exclusively here
on your classic metal show.
You see all the commercials for online gambling, but you're afraid to try them because you just don't want to lose, right? Well, play with the house's money. Right now, sign up with FanDuel at fanduel.cnspn.com and get $15 of free bets just for using our link. Sign up today at fanduel.cnspn.com and get $15 worth of bets on FanDuel. Be responsible and play today. FanDuel.